possible with support from World Harvest International and Gourmet Foods, with foods from around the world, including imported chocolates, cookies, coffee, extra virgin olive oil, and featuring a selection of new cheeses every week. World Harvest Foods, at the intersection of 6th and University in Champaign, encourages you to join them in supporting public radio. Today's broadcast is made possible in part by a grant from Horene's Pianos Plus, your Steinway Piano Showroom in Bloomington. Horene's Pianos Plus offers new and pre-owned pianos by Steinway & Sons, Boston by Steinway, and other fine pianos. Programming on WILL is made possible in part by a grant from Pace Incorporated and Carl's Low Vision Center, presenting the annual Low Vision Fair on Friday, August 6th from 11 to 2 p.m. at Urbana's Lincoln Square Mall. More information is available at 344-5433 or TTY at 344-5024.
Good morning. Welcome to Focus 580, our morning talk show. My name's David Inge. Glad to have you with us. This morning, we welcome back to the program Phil Nixon. He's an extension entomologist at University of Illinois. Every once in a while, he's here. Particularly, we like to have him here during the summertime to answer questions about dealing with insect pests in the home. So if you have some kind of bug problem, it could be inside, could be in the home landscape. If it's enough of a problem so you've decided you must get rid of it, you can call in here, and Phil will tell you what to do. And I know that every once in a while he does ask the question, well, can you live with this thing? If you can, well, or maybe he'll have some suggestions on how you can live with it. But there are times when you say no. The answer is no, I cannot live with this thing. So if you can't, then he is the guy who can tell you how to deal with it. If you're here in Champaign-Urbana, where we are, 333-9455. That's the number to call. If it would be long-distance call, use the toll-free line, 800-222-9455. We'll get in as many callers as we can and help out as many folks as we can. So if you have a question, you can call us. Thanks once again for being here.
Glad to be here.
I think this is now the time. There are times, I think, early in the summer that people are sort of itchy about dealing with grubs,
mm-hmm.
and that you have to tell them, wait. But now is the time.
Now is the time. And while we have our both the annual white grub, the northern and southern mass chafers that are that have laid their eggs, and those eggs have hatched. Also, the Japanese beetle have laid their eggs, and those eggs have hatched. And we normally figure, treatments can be put on during July, but when we get into early August, we get into a point to where it's important to kind of scout your lawn and see if you've really got a grub situation. This is a time in which you can really just go out there and take a heavy knife and cut through the turf, pull it back, and see how many grubs you've got. And they'll all be right there in the root zone. If the soil is kind of dry, they may be down 3 or 4 inches, but that's easily dug up with the knife and found. And they're going to be white and C-shaped and anywhere from a quarter to a half an inch long. They're usually not very big right now. But being white against the dark soil, they're very easy to see. And normally, 10 to 12 grubs per square foot or more is enough to cause turf injury. Now, particularly in many areas, in the Champaign-Urbana area, as well as many areas of the state, we're not really anticipating very high numbers. And the reason for that is because in a typical summer in Illinois, the grubs will go to where there's nice green grass and damp soil. And in a typical year, that's going to be irrigated turf. People would have watered their lawns. In many parts of Illinois, with northwestern Illinois being a notable exception, they've been very dry up there. But through much of the state, we've had lots of rainfall, more than normal for late June through July. And as a result, the beetles that have been present have been able to lay their eggs over large areas. In addition, not only just irrigated areas, but non-irrigated turf. In addition, the numbers of beetles have been a little bit lower. The Japanese beetle numbers seem to be a tad lower than 2 years ago and before. Last year, they were even lower than this year in general. And then the mass chafers, where beetles were tending to be lower in number this year. So you put a combination of fewer insects lay eggs, eggs scattered all over the place, and we're not really anticipating much in the way of white grub problems this year. Damage will tend to show up as brownish areas of turf that will be easily pulled up, and you can see the grubs under it. Might start seeing that damage as early as the middle of August through September into October, and these can be fairly extensive, take out a whole yard if you're not on top of it. But we do not anticipate anything more than what we would call just a few hot spots. There will be some places where, you might have part of your front yard that has some grubs, but most of it probably won't have enough to cause any real damage, and realize that an occasional grub is not really a problem.
Okay. Well, we got some folks ready to go who have questions, and we'll get right to it.
I guess I should say what the answer is.
Yes.
I forgot it myself.
If you
do have white grubs, at this time of year, we recommend treating with triclorfan, which is sold as Dylox, D-Y-L-O-X, and you'll find that in garden centers and hardware stores and so on. And that's put on the soil at the recommended rate and watered in with at least a half an inch of water.
Okay, good.
I hate it when somebody goes all through all this junk and then says, forgets to give the answer.
What's the bottom line? Right. All right. Well, and now we will get to some questions. We have someone to start with in Champaign, line number one, right here. Hello.
Good morning. Mm-hmm. You were talking about living with it, and I just wanted to caution that sometimes you definitely do want to live with it. Yes, a couple of days ago, my wife found a rather brilliantly colored caterpillar munching on our parsley,
mm-hmm.
and it looked vaguely familiar, but I couldn't place it. And eventually, I went to Google Images and entered caterpillar and
found black swallowtail. Right,
that's what it turned out to
mm-hmm.
be. And
yeah,
she decided that she wants to plant more parsley next year.
We actually plant parsley and so on just to get the butterflies. The adult stage is the black swallowtail. It has about a 3.5-inch wingspan, has some light black wings with light spots on it and nice color spots on it. And the caterpillars themselves are green with vertical black banding. And when they first hatch out, they're kind of dark brown or blackish and white. They look like bird manure, and that's a protective mechanism for them. Most birds don't like to eat bird manure. And then as they grow up, they become green with these black bands, and they really blend into the foliage. But any of the parsley and related plants like carrots and fennel, dill, these sorts of things will get these caterpillars, and they really don't eat much in the way of the houseplant for the butterfly that you get. So many times we recommend, if you can live with the damage, appreciate the butterfly.
Yeah, the black bands have little yellow dots
mm-hmm.
on them, and I think the really noticeable thing is the two little orange-like antenna.
Yeah, you don't get the orange antenna sticking out unless you hassle the caterpillar. That's a defensive mechanism. It has a very putrid odor to it when it's emerged. But, yeah, if you pick them up or handle them or mess with them, they will push out these horns that will be 1/8 to 3/16 inch long, very obvious. And usually we're too far. Our nose isn't close enough to it to notice a disagreeable odor. But if it was being grabbed by a mouse or something like that, they would know it. They would get it right in their face. So that's a protective mechanism.
Well, thank you very much.
You're welcome.
Thank you. Let's go to next caller. This is in Piatt County, line number two. Hello.
Hello.
Mm-hmm.
We have a problem with hornets this
mm-hmm.
year. We live in the country, and we had in our front yard, we have some big yews. They're pretty good size. We got some globe-shaped ones and some that are cone-shaped. And last week, we were working in the garden and trimming those yews. And next thing I knew, I thought it was just a bumblebee. But it was buzzing around my head, and I kind of brushed it away. And bam, I got bit right in the ear. And it wasn't very long. My husband was out there with me, and he got bit twice, right through his shirt, on his shoulder and his back. And so I had called the extension office, and they gave me a number to call on to a lady that knew something about hornets. And she said that this particular type, it looks kind of like a bumblebee, but it's more oblong.
Okay.
And it's got a black bottom end on it, but the top part of it's got, it looks fuzzy, but I'm not sure that it really is. It's kind of a dirty gold.
Okay.
And so anyway, this lady told us to use a yellow light and dust underneath our ewes because they lived in the ground in mulch.
Okay.
So that's what we did. And we did that about a week ago. Well, a couple days ago, we haven't noticed they were gone yet because we looked out in the front yard. They really love the Russian sage out there. And so we've just stayed away from that area, hoping that that their nest would be under some of those ewes that we dusted under, and but nothing has happened yet. And now we notice out in the backyard, a couple days ago, my husband was standing out in the yard. He had been deadheading, and zap, he got bit right behind his knee.
What do the insects look like?
They look very similar to a bumblebee.
Yeah, but I don't know what you think a bumblebee is. I need a little more information. I get so many misidentifications of that type.
All right, its bottom half is black.
Uh-huh.
And it's not round, its bottom
more,
half. It's kind of pointed a little bit.
And how big is the insect in length?
Oh, some of them are very small.
And that is?
Only, I'm trying to figure out a length on it.
Okay.
I would say they might be, let me get a yardstick and I can tell you real quick. I would say that they're, some of them are some of them were 3/4 inch, and some of them are even larger than an inch.
Okay, all right. And they're kind of patterned yellow and black on the top?
Yeah, on the top. My husband didn't even think that it was really fuzz. It just had that color.
You might have, what you may have are giant hornets, or European hornets, rather, and they may be, you need to look to see where the insects seem to be flying, be watchful for them flying around. And see if it's giant hornet, they're likely to be, or European hornet, they're likely to be in the trunk of a tree somewhere. I think the person that you called an extension probably thought they were cicada killers, in which the ones that are flying around usually don't sting to start with. But you could get stung, but that many stings is very, very unusual for cicada killers. I think you may have European hornet, and they're most apt to be nesting inside the trunk of a tree. And once you, if you can go out there in the middle of the day in the afternoon and see where they seem to be flying, and see if where they might be flying to and from, once you find out where their nest is, then dusting around that surface with carbaryl soda 7, using a 7 dust, which is probably what you were recommended before underneath the shrubs, should give you control of that nest. But you pretty well need to figure out where it is. I think the information you got where it was probably good for what they knew, but because the European hornet is not all that common, but it sounds like that's what it's got. And particularly, these tend to be very much attracted to lights at night, and can be somewhat of a problem that way too. So doing a little bit of investigation should show where the nest is.
Now I have another question. There are some that are they're all different sizes. So does that mean that some are younger, or that we got more than one kind?
You may have more than one kind, but very likely what you've got is a case of. Of the European hornet sometimes has different sizes in its adults. I mean, all of them that you're seeing are adults. They may be younger, but they don't get bigger when they get older. But you can have some workers that are going to be larger than others. This time of year, we may be seeing some queens, and they will be typically larger than the workers, and that would make sense with the insect that I think you may have.
Okay.
All right.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
Thanks
for the call. Would they, by any chance, they would absolutely be in a tree? They wouldn't be in, like my husband has, compost out?
Well, they might be in other locations, but the most common location is going to be the hollow of a tree where there's been some wood rot or something of that nature, an old branch injury, something like that. But they can be in other locations, and you just need to be watchful to see where they seem to be flying. This time of year, there should be enough. It shouldn't be too hard if you look carefully to see where they're coming and going in your yard somewhere.
All right.
Okay.
Thank you.
All right. Thanks
Bye-bye.
For the call. Our guest in this part of Focus 580, Phil Nixon. He is an extension entomologist at U of I, and it's an opportunity to call in if you have insect problems around the home. Could be in the house, could be in the yard. You can call in. Just what we need to do is get the best description of the insect, because that's going to determine, you know, what it is and how you're going to go after it. Try and give us a description, and then Phil will suggest what you can do. 333-9455, toll-free 800-222-9455. And we have someone up next in Muhammad, line 3. Hello.
Good morning.
Yes.
I'm caller number 3. We live in the wooded area of Muhammad, near the Sangamon. And because of that, we have very interesting creatures that are constantly coming into the house or trying to make their way into the house.
You live with nature, nature comes into your house usually.
Yeah, unfortunately. We didn't realize that.
Comes with the area.
With the territory, right.
Mm-hmm.
One of the things we have, I see often in the house, are these, well, other than big black ants, is this other kind of insect. Normally I see it on the, walking along the floors. We have floors. And at first I thought it was kind of like a tiny little, I thought it was a family of, from the ants or something, a different kind of, member. But these almost look like little bit tiny, I don't know if you want to call them wasps or not.
Okay.
They have antenna. They're kind of brownish. They occasionally, once in a while, I've seen a flying one. They have two pincers at the bottom of them.
Okay. And these are about half an inch, 5/8 of an inch long?
Well, including the pincers, yes.
Okay, these would be earwigs. And
sorry?
Earwigs, E-A-R-W-I-G, earwig.
Oh.
Okay, and these will tend to become numerous towards the end of June and become and be fairly numerous through all the first two or three weeks of July. My guess is you're not seeing them hardly anymore. There's a few that will hang on later, but normally they tend to disappear. They feed on decaying organic matter primarily, molds and mildews, being associated with bark mulch. If you've got bark mulch next to the side of your house or fallen leaves, or if there are fallen leaves that are accumulated there, that serves as food for them. They come in through cracks and crevices, and caulking cracks and crevices in the foundation will help keep them out. The good news is that this insect has to lay its eggs in soil outside to reproduce, and so it will not reproduce in your house. So the only ones you have are the ones that you see, okay, and they're not going to multiply on you. So we normally just recommend removing them as you see them indoors. If you wanted to use an aerosol ant and roach spray in cracks and crevices along baseboards, etc., around the foundation and cracks and crevices, this would help reduce the numbers you see inside.
I see. Okay. Because we have so many black ants, sometimes the ant traps work, but I think this year they're up in the attic because we've had a couple of mice up in the attic that we've caught. And gosh, if we don't get to them right away, the ants seem to defecate them.
Okay.
Is that specifically call for an exterminator?
If you've got large black ants over a quarter of an inch, those would be carpenter ants. And they will establish a colony in the house if you've had some area of damp wood, a leaky roof, a leaky water or drain pipe. And usually these will show up 3 to 5 years after you've had that, even if you've had the leak fixed. Now, in a wooded area like you're talking about, they will also come from nests in outside trees. And particularly if the trees come very close to the house roof, say within 3 feet of a roof, the branches come that close, then they'll commonly drop off onto the roof, and you'll see them fairly commonly based on that. Generally, if you're seeing 10 or 12 or more per day, that's an indication you likely have a nest in the house. If you're seeing only one or two a day, maybe three or four, something along that line, that's usually just scouts that are coming from outside nests, and you can ignore them or step on them or whatever you want, but it normally doesn't involve any control effort. The ants are not going to cause any real serious harm. Even if you have a nest in the house, typically you're looking at a hollowed-out area of a 2x4, maybe a foot or two long. Nothing that's very major as far as wood destruction, nothing even in the league with termites. So even if you have a nest in the house, sometimes it's good. You can just wait to see where you can try to figure out where it may be, where they're coming from. These ants tend to be more active at night, and so you'll see them late in the evening. Sometimes by putting out some honey, they will pick up on that and go directly back to the nest, and you can get a pretty good idea where they are by that if you can't figure out if their nest where the nest might be in the house.
I see. But you don't think it's necessary just to have an exterminator come in and sort of, shall we say, bomb the house?
Well, what they will do is, in this situation, is they will spray cracks and crevices and baseboards, and this will make it so you don't see any ants for a month. then you have to have them back and have it done again and again and again and again for 20, 30, 40 years. That's how long the nest will last. So an alternative would be, and what they would do if they had the information, but they normally don't, you just say, I want to get rid of the ants, so they don't have any choice but to just do what I told you. But if you can figure out where the nest is, if there's one in the house, then the way to do it is to expose the nest, replace the wood that has the ants in it, or soak it with an ant and roach spray, and this will kill the nest. And that eliminates it many times for the cost of a can of Raid or whatever. But your biggest cost is patching up a hole in the wall or whatever you might have done to get to that nest. But that's the best way to get to them. Some of the pest control people have baits that'll work for carpenter ants that are specifically for them. They're not available in the stores for you to buy. And that could be an answer, too. And many times they can do that and help eliminate it. So whichever way you want to go, many times it's something that you can put up with easier than, and then just kind of keep an eye on it. And many times you can figure out where their nest may be over time. It may take them several months or a year, but they're not really causing a lot of damage in the interim.
Okay. I've just wondered that this year we haven't seen that the aged beetle, the one, you know, that everybody thinks is a modified ladybug.
Okay. Just wait a while. It is lower. The multicolored Asian lady beetle is lower in numbers this year. We have not had the big problem with the soybean aphids, which allow them to build up this year. And there will be some this fall, but probably not in near as high numbers as there was last year. They vary depending on their prey, and the soybean aphid is reduced in number this year so far. And as a result, the lady beetles are going to be lower in number, but some people won't notice a difference. They'll still have a lot of them because the lady beetles feed on insects on trees and shrubs as well.
Okay. Well, thank you very much for your assistance.
Right. You're welcome.
Thanks for the
day.
Call. Thank Bye-bye. You. You too. We'll just continue and think of the next person up is in Indiana on our line number one. Hello.
Hello. Good morning.
Yes.
I enjoy your program very much.
Thanks.
I think I have a hornet problem also. I have bees that are on my hummingbird feeder and have actually seen them chase the hummingbirds. I was wondering if there was anything you might suggest I could do for that.
Trying to keep bees and wasps away from hummingbird feeders is almost an impossibility, to my knowledge.
I thought it probably was.
Yeah, you're putting out sugar water there, which is good for them. Many times people will do better depending on the style of the hummingbird feeder. Those that do not have any yellow on them, in fact, will be less attracted to the bees and wasps. Mm-hmm. The birds will come readily to red, which the bees and wasps really cannot see. They don't have, their color spectrum doesn't get into that area. And so the hummingbirds will come to red. In fact, many people that put out by hummingbird feeders will immediately paint any yellow parts on it red or black or some earth tone to confuse the bees. The bees are very much attracted to yellow, so that will help.
Okay.
Also, getting a hummingbird feeder that tends to have a relatively long tube that they have to feed through will help defeat the bees and wasps.
Oh, okay.
Some of the hummingbird feeders have very shallow pockets that their mouth parts will fit into and they can get into the sugar water. Others have more of a long tube that the hummingbird has to stick their beak in. The beak of a hummingbird is quite a bit longer than the mouth parts of a bee or wasp. So combination of getting rid of the yellow and having longer nectar tubes that they feed through will help defeat and frustrate the bees and wasps, and hummingbirds can still get to what you're putting out.
Well, thank you very much.
You're welcome.
All right. Thank you. And to Ashmore next, line number two. Hello.
Yes, hello.
Mm-hmm.
We have black ants, very small ones, underneath our house and hills,
mm-hmm.
burrows, or whatever you call them. And I have been spraying them with what they recommended for ants and that type of thing. But it seems like I've reduced it, but I haven't stopped it. And I wonder if there's a better way that I could go about it.
Probably not. are they coming up into your house?
Yes.
Okay. Well, if they're coming up into your house, then there are ant baits that you can use, and probably the best ones are going to be protein baits. This is hydromethylnon, is the insecticide in it, and they'll be sold under the brand name of Combat Ant Baits. If they don't come to the Combat, then try a sweet bait, which will be either taro, which has boric acid in it, Or Grant's ant bait, which has an arsenic toxicant.
What was the last one? Grant?
Grant's. Just like U.S. Grant.
Okay, got you.
Grant's ant bait. And that will work if they don't come to the combat. And that way you're selecting for the ants that are coming up into your house rather than just trying to eliminate all of them in your crawl space or wherever. You know, trying to get rid of all the ants in an area that's outside, even one that's underneath your house, is, you know, trying to stop the water from flowing down a river. I mean, there's just so many ants out there that are going to come in and recolonize.
Okay.
So I would suggest that you concentrate on the ones that are, by baiting on the ones that are coming up into the house, they will take that back and kill off a colony. There will be other ants that will come in and take up the extra space, but there may be species that aren't going to be interested in coming up into your house, and they do vary on how, whether they will or not. So that's probably the way to go.
Well, I was thinking, too, that, you know, I thought, well, I might spray for termites and ants at the same time.
Yeah, you can spray the foundation, the outside foundation, the inside foundation, you have a crawl space, with the foundation sprays. These will be permethrin, and you can find those in garden centers and hardware stores and home centers and so on. And that will give you control for about a month. But the answer I'm giving to you should last longer than that.
Well, I noticed. I figured maybe their eggs were hatching back out because once I sprayed, then there would be a lapse of a couple of 3 months before we had a whole bunch, a whole group again of increased populations.
Well, probably what was happening there is you were killing off the ant nests that were there, but more were coming in and starting new nests. You know, you kill off ant nests, and there's so many ants out there flying around trying to start new ones that usually within 6 weeks to 2 months, you've got new ant hills. And by selectively eliminating the ones that are coming up into your house, then you're, over time, you will select for ones in your crawl space or next to your house that don't like to come into your house, and so you won't have a problem, even though you will have anthills there.
Okay, that's very good, and I appreciate that so much.
Okay.
Right, thank you for the call. Back to Muhammad, I think, for our next caller, line three. Hello.
Yes. I have a chigger problem, and in the 5 years I've been here in Urbana, I have never gotten chigger bites at all. Is there something unusual about this summer? My neighbors have also reported the same thing.
Well, chiggers are immature mites, larval mites, and they do better under moist conditions. Does it sound anything like our weather pattern this spring and summer?
Yeah.
I think the increased rainfall has probably increased the number of chiggers, and you're right. Typically in central Illinois, most people aren't going to have chigger problems. They're going to be more numerous in tall grass areas, so avoiding those or keeping things mowed will help keep down the number of chiggers because it exposes the chiggers to dryness. Also, you can, if that doesn't take care of it, if you still got them in mowed areas, then using spraying lawn with Carbaryl, which is sold as 7, one treatment will usually eliminate the chiggers for an entire season.
I see. Okay, thank you very much.
You're welcome.
All right, and to Philo, I believe, line one. Hello.
Good morning.
Mm-hmm.
I have a question for you. You were talking about the cicada killers. I have a wasp that around the front of my house near the foundation. There's several holes, probably about a quarter of inch in diameter,
mm-hmm.
and I have this wasp hornet-type character. It goes in and out of there, and I've noticed him taking insects down into the holes.
Yeah, these are probably an inch and a half long or so.
Inch and a half long. Wasps. They don't seem to bother you.
Mm-hmm.
They buzz around, but they don't seem to, bother you. But I'm just curious what you think they are.
They're probably cicada killers. If they're about an inch and a half long, they will be black and yellow banded and have reddish transparent wings. The females are just interested in digging holes, finding prey, stinging it into submission, and dragging it into a hole, lay an egg on it. Those holes go down about 6 to 8 inches. They cover it up that hole and dig a new one and start all over again. They can sting, but I've only known of 3 cases of people got stung by them in 24 years of doing this kind of work.
Okay. They come back every year. I've lived 3 years, and each year they're there.
Yeah, usually they like bare soil areas.
Right.
The 3 people got stung. One stepped on one barefoot. The other 2 grabbed a hold of one of these barehanded. And I submit to you that if you do either of those, you ought to be stung. What normally intimidates people is the males. The males, cicada killers, look just like the females, and they form aerial territories. And what will happen is when you walk into their territory, all of a sudden you have this inch and a half long wasp hovering in front of your eyes, usually about 3 or 4 inches in front of you, maybe 6 or 8 inches. And then all of a sudden they zip to the side, and then they zip to the back. And about then, you've gone ballistic. They then usually leave you alone, And if you're walking across the yard, another 50, 75 feet, you run across into another male's territory, and the same thing happens all over again. What they're doing is they're checking you out. As far as they're concerned, there are only two types of creatures that they care about. One is if you're another male cicada killer, you need to be run off. And if you're a female cicada killer, they want to mate with you. And when they figure out you're neither one, they could care less about you. And but they always have to check you out that way, and it's intimidating. But the male wasp, the wasps sting by a modified egg-laying device. And so males don't even have the equipment. They can't sting. But they look just like the others. They sound like the others. They act like the others to a certain extent. But they're all bluff.
Only the female stings.
Only the female can sting.
There's probably 15 or 20 holes. Is that all one cicada killer?
Probably you have several cicada killers, because you probably have 15 to 20 cicada killers. Because okay. Usually what will happen is each one will make its own hole and find a prey item, and then lay an egg on it down there, which the larva hatches out and eats the still living but paralyzed insect and grows up. But after she lays an egg on a prey item down there, on another insect that she's drugged down there, typically a cicada or large katydid or something, then they will cover it up and dig a new hole. So usually open holes indicate that many females.
Okay, cicada killer, the correct name for them, or is that just a term? Is that, what is the correct name for this wasp?
Cicada killer.
Cicada killer, okay.
Scientific name is Fessus fasciosa.
Okay, now is the male, is this like a harem, all these holes here?
He tries as best he can.
Okay, so it's,
and, of course, if he gets a little bit on the low side of energy, then another one will probably usurp him.
Okay, thank you very much. I appreciate it.
Okay. Uh-huh. Very good. Other questions are welcome, 333-9455, toll-free, 800-222-9455. Every summer we get the questions, and when May is on, and I'm sure that it's just because if you've never seen a cicada killer before, it's probably the biggest wasp that you've mm-hmm. ever seen.
Yeah,
and if it does come right up and get in your face, it could be kind of a scary thing because they're just so big.
Yeah, the golf courses have a big problem with them because people get intimidated. They don't want to play golf out there. They'll close down holes on their golf course because of them. The individual, usually we try to get people to live with the cicada killers. They can be treated. You can put 7-dust around the opening of a nest. As long as it stays dry for a day or two, that will kill off that individual cicada killer. But they really are not, although they're intimidating, they're really not a threat. And when people understand that helps out. But they get, golf courses get them in the edge of sand traps. We also have sand wasps, which are a little bit smaller. They're typically about an inch long, and they will like to get in sandy areas. We get calls about them and cicada killers in sandboxes, areas that are particularly sand areas for the sand wasps. We get a lot of calls from park districts and so on that have sand volleyball courts, and there may be 30 or 40 of these in each sand volleyball court. And in those situations, it's very, very hard to do anything about it in a sandbox or anything like that, because because if you put insecticide in there, then you have scantily clad people rolling into that insecticide, which for particularly a public entity, that's a tremendous liability possibility. Anything that those people have that goes wrong with them in the next 5, 10, 15, 20 years, they blame on that insecticide, whether it was true or not. So it's usually a case of sandboxes. We recommend that they just keep them covered when children are not using them. If a wasp can't get access back and forth all the time, they'll abandon it. And we suggest many times on sand volleyball courts putting a tarp over it when it's not in use. Oh, that's a real problem when you have a public place that you pretty well have to have available at any time of the day or night. Mm-hmm. So it's kind of a problem, but it's not an easy one to handle sometimes.
Okay, let's go on here. Another caller in Champaign, line one. Hello.
Good morning.
Yes.
Subject is bagworms.
Oh, yes.
Well, we have been picking bagworms off of a little planting of evergreens in our backyard, which is quite low, and we can stand up and get them off. We also have them on a couple of blue spruce in the front yard, and our neighbors up and down the street seem to have them. I'm as interested in the behavior of the creature who lays these eggs as I am getting rid of them. I presume that they are just here to stay.
It's a native insect, so yeah, you can assume that. Being a native insect, it has its own predators and parasites and diseases that keep it from getting too much out of line. Now, it gets more than we're willing to put up with, but from an ecological standpoint, they don't ever get tremendously huge in number. What will happen is typically they will be numerous, and pretty much all native insects run this cycle. They'll be numerous for about 3 years, and then they tend to disappear, and of course, we don't even think about them.
Yeah.
They won't be very numerous then for probably 7 or 8 years, 6 years, somewhere around in there, and then they'll start building up again. Mm-hmm. So about every decade, or a little bit more than that, we have them for about a three-year span. And because we have other things to worry about in the intervening 7 or 8 years, it just seems like they're always showing up, but they really aren't. They will hatch out, and the caterpillars go to the top of the trees in the middle part of June. This year they hatched out early. They hatched out in the later part of May, but typically in about the middle part of June, and they will drop themselves on silk threads that are three feet long or so, and these catch in the wind, and they blow from tree to tree. This is how the bagworm gets around. And they'll do that for about 2 weeks until about the early part of July. They settle down and really start to feed. And they all climb to the top of the tree, primarily all of them do, and start to feed and work their way down. So if you can't control them at the top of the tree, you can't get control on the tree. So people that are wanting to spray for them, if they can't hit the top of the tree, they need to get somebody who can, hire somebody. Or if you can't pick that high, then you may need to think about spraying. And as they grow, they will tend to work their way down, and people tend to see them lower down, but using some binoculars on taller trees will help you tell where you have an infestation. They tend to feed throughout the summer until they get about 2 weeks, they will typically start pupating. Going into the cocoon stage, the interesting thing is the males will go through 5 larval stages, and they will pupate first. The females go through 6, and so they're out there a little bit longer, and they will pupate. The males come out as black moths that are about 1/2 inch long and have clear wings, and they are unable to feed. And they live on stored fat bodies and so on, stored food from a larval stage, and they will fly around and mate with the females. The females are larviform. They will turn from a pupa or a cocoon stage into an adult, but it will look kind of like the larva. And she stays in the bag. She has no wings. She cannot fly. And there's an opening in the bottom of the bag where the male mates with them. And then the female fills up her body with eggs and dies. And for the winter, every other bag will be probably a male. And every other one will be a female. And the female bags will have anywhere from 300 to 1,000 eggs in them. And that's how they overwinter, to hatch out again in about the middle of June. So that's kind of a life cycle. That's the way they do. And I always like to say,
they
overwinter in the bag as eggs inside the dead female's body hanging on the tree. So one way of control is any time from, say, the end of September through the winter into early June, that you can go out there and pick those off and don't drop them under the tree, but destroy them, throw them in the garbage, throw them in the trash, throw them in, burn them, whatever you want to do, bury them a couple feet deep, something along that line will kill them. But if you drop them on the ground under the tree, they'll hatch there and climb a tree. It's not going to be a problem to them.
We've watched them move, and really their behavior is interesting to watch.
Mm-hmm.
You see the worm start to kind of come forward out of the bag,
yeah,
and then he pulls the cocoon after himself.
Mm-hmm.
And it's an interesting way to locomote.
Yeah.
Well, thank you very much. I wanted to make a comment about little ants, not the big ones, but
uh-huh,
the little ones that you sometimes find in your kitchen. We have a built-in microwave oven, and one day we wanted to replace the lights that shine down on the stovetop, and my husband took that panel out of the microwave oven, and it was loaded with ant eggs. We haven't had a problem with ants since we just cleaned that up.
Yeah, a lot of times the ants will get into an area like that that probably has grease accumulated in it. There's usually openings, holes in it.
Not my house, they don't.
Well, underneath that cover, I bet it does. And that was probably a food source for them there.
Uh-huh.
I doubt you remove that every week and clean it.
Oh, no, I'm afraid not.
Okay. There's always some place in anybody's kitchen that they don't clean every time. Otherwise, they'd be doing nothing else.
Yeah.
And that was probably a food source. And what you saw as eggs would have probably been the larvae. The eggs are very, very tiny, but the larvae tend to be very obvious in what people generally call eggs.
Yeah, and they're white and
yes,
yucky. Okay, well, thank you so much.
You're welcome.
All right, bye-bye.
Thank you.
For those people who would like to control the bagworms at this time of year, you would use Cyflufrin, which is available as Bayer Advanced Garden multi-insect killer. So it is not too late to kill the bagworms, although it's probably too late to use the BTK, the Bacillus thuringiensis kerstaki, the dipeller thuricide. But the Bayer Advanced Garden multi-insect killer should give a good control.
Okay. Next is caller in Chicago, line number 4. Hello.
Good morning.
Yes.
Is that a myth that some people believe they are more attracted to mosquitoes than other people?
No, it's not myth. It's been proven scientifically.
Why is that?
Mosquitoes are attracted to, first of all, large dark objects. And so the smaller, lighter object you are, the less attractive you are. So wearing lighter clothing is less attractive, and those people that are larger are going to be more attractive to start with. There is also, when they get closer to a possible prey item, which we're talking about ourselves now,
right.
They will start picking up lactic acid, which is given off in the use of mussels. And then as they get closer, carbon dioxide, which is also given out through the pores of our skin by the use of mussels. And generally, the more you are working at things, the more active and the more your muscles you're being used, and the more lactic acid or carbon dioxide is going to be let off, and so the more attractive you are. People that are overweight are going to be putting out more just to be living there because it takes generally more work to just do anything. There's another whole variety of other chemicals that are produced that are produced more by some people than others, and mosquitoes will hone in on that. And also people doing the same amount of activity, some will produce more lactic acid and carbon dioxide to the atmosphere than others. So there's some variability, and all that works together to make some people more attractive and not. I knew that when I was out out somewhere where mosquitoes, if my father was nearby, I didn't have to worry about mosquitoes because they would all bite him. And, you know, obviously our genetics are very, very close, but he was very attractive. I am not. And that has definitely been proven.
Perspiration, does that have an effect?
Perspiration, because you're actually exerting more when you're perspiring more, you're putting out more lactic acid and carbon dioxide. The perspiration itself probably doesn't make a factor, but your pores are open when you're perspiring, which means all sorts of chemicals you're exuding more than you would otherwise, which also would probably attract the insects more.
Somebody once said that brewer's yeast would help. Is that a myth?
Brewer's yeast, some of the vitamin B vitamins, garlic, all work for some people. And for others, particularly brewer's yeast and B vitamins, some people's chemistries will actually make them more attractive to mosquitoes. So, and generally, it's not recommended that you take a lot of this sort of stuff just for mosquito control. The garlic tablets have been found to be fairly effective, but they tend to repel people as well. So usually people use that when they camp rather than anywhere else, when they're out by themselves. But there is something to that, but it's variable just like the people are variable in our attractiveness.
It's worth a try.
You can try it, and if it doesn't work, you know you're one of those that, for most people, it doesn't make any difference. For some people, it makes you more attractive. For some people, it makes you less attractive to mosquitoes.
All right. Thank you.
All right. Mm-hmm. Thanks. Is there anything that, supposing that you're going to be spending time outside, and I'm not thinking of, say, doing yard work, but you want to be out on the patio, you're having a party, you're going to have a barbecue, something like that, stuff that seems to be effective, if you just want to have a certain area for maybe a period of a few hours, you'd like to try to get as rid of the mosquitoes, yeah, just if you can.
What I normally recommend is a large fan blowing across the people that are sitting there. Mosquitoes have to they're not really strong flyers, and they have to come in and hover and locate where you are and then come in and land to bite you. And all that takes a relatively low wind speed in order to handle that for a mosquito. So a window fan, a box fan, something large fan blowing across the people that are sitting there will normally keep the mosquitoes from being able to hover and come in and land and feed. And so that's what I typically recommend. There are various types of citronella candles and things like this. Torches can reduce the number somewhat. You can use the old Indian method of mosquito control, and that is sit in the smoke of a fire. Your eyes will water, but you won't have much in the way of mosquitoes. I'm not going to get into whether you're going to increase your chances of lung cancer by inhaling smoke, but smoke does repel mosquitoes, and probably what it does is it fouls up their sensory materials, sensory organs to where they can't find you. And then, of course, there are insect repellents you can put on your body. And other than that, if you're having a party and it's a once or twice a year thing, there are sprays, fogging that you can do around the area that will give you a few hours of relief from mosquitoes as well.
Okay. We have about 7 minutes left in this part of the show with Phil Nixon. He's an extension entomologist with U of I. If you have insect pest problems, you can give us a call. 333-9455, toll free, 800-222-9455. Next caller is in Crete, line two. Hello.
Yeah, I was told that if the spiders don't come into the house, they are good watchdogs, so to speak, for stopping ants coming into your house. What do you think about the spider defense?
Most spiders are not going to be big ant feeders, except for those that are specialists on it. There are certain spiders, particularly many of the jumping spiders, or several of the jumping spiders, that are ant mimics, and they actually look like an ant, and they work on smelling like an ant. Smell is a big thing in ant country. They will actually sit there and just pick off ants individually, and because they look and act and smell like an ant, the ants leave them alone. Although spiders are general feeders, an ant generally is going to be is probably not real good food compared to a lot of things. It's a lot of hard covering for very little soft stuff inside that's good to eat from a spider perspective, although there's a lot of them. So certainly spiders will feed on ants, but I wouldn't necessarily make the suggestion that lots of spiders around the outside are going to keep ants from being a problem. I don't think spiders are big ant predators in general.
What about the boric acid or the mothball defense?
Boric acid is effective against ants, as well as silverfish and cockroaches. The boric acid to be effective should stay dry, and so it should be put in locations where it will stay dry. You also want to cracks and crevices and so on, preferably on the inside of a house. It's important to not have it to where people or pets can get in contact with that, because it is a toxic material which apparently doesn't have a bad taste to it, so eating too much of it can result in death and does kill on the average of one person in the United States per year and used in roach and ant control.
What about mothballs?
Mothballs are going to be effective in an enclosed area, but because by very nature ants are coming and going from somewhere outside or moving in, you're going to have air movement and that's going to negate a lot of the mothballs. Mothballs are very effective if it's an enclosed area where the fumes get very, very intense. In a more open area, they might prefer not to cross across an area that has a lot of mothballs or moth crystals, but they'll go across it if they don't have any other choice. So I don't, out in the open where mothballs and moth crystal odor is dissipated and not held in huge amount in very high concentrations, not going to be very effective.
We have two or three cats. Can I be assured if an exterminator comes to my house that those cats are not going to die 2 weeks after he arrives?
If you have any insecticide application around your house, it's a good idea to keep pets, cats, dogs, whatever, away from that residue until it's dried, or if you want to be on the safer side than that, 24 hours after application. So many times having the cats confined to a room that is not treated is a good answer in those type of situations.
One more question. You mentioned some carpenter ant chemicals that would kill carpenter ants are only available through the exterminator.
Right.
There's a number of items that are only available through exterminators. Is that just because they're poisonous and somebody's going to give it to his wife or something?
Typically, companies will have things that are sold only to exterminators, pest control people, because they don't want to hassle with the public, to be frank about it. If you're going to sell things to the public, you've got to realize there's going to be a bunch of people going to use it that are not going to read the label. They're not going to pay attention to the directions that they do. They're going to have all kinds of questions that if they read the stuff, they wouldn't have those questions. And so it means you got to have a whole bunch of people and a whole lot of money invested to answer these questions. And as a result, some companies say it's just not worth it. I'll make my money selling to people that are professional, that'll read and follow the label, and I'll have very few phone calls I have to handle. Most of us don't look at it that way, but in general, non-professionals tend to think they know more than what's on the label, or else they just rather call than read. And so a lot of companies just do not sell to the public simply because it's not worth a hassle. They can make their money without it.
Thanks for the good advice.
Okay.
Right. We'll try to get at least one more caller here. Lincoln, line one. Hello.
Yes, hello.
Mm-hmm.
I recently treated my two cats for fleas, and now sometimes when I'm walking across my carpet, they're jumping up on my ankles.
Okay.
I don't want to live with them.
You still living with the cats? Cats are still in the house?
Yes.
Okay. What you need to do is, that's the correct thing to do. You want the cats there for bait. You want to keep them treated. What will happen is that the cocoon stage or pupal stage of the flea will last for a couple weeks. The larval stage will last for 3 or 4 weeks. And an occasional flea should be picked up eventually by one of the cats, and because they're treated, will be killed. If you wanted to try to, and so if you can just put up with it, that they will probably eliminate and get continually less in number. If you want to do something about it rather than wait, then there are most of your flea sprays can be sprayed lightly across the carpet, and that will knock them down for probably about a week, and then they may show up again. And doing that for a couple times until the fleas start to really reduce may be a good option for you.
Okay, and I should keep treating the cats about once a month?
Whatever is directed. If you use the topical application, going by your vet directions or the directions on the container is what you need to do. Most of these last for a month. Some will last 2 or 3 months. It depends what you bought.
Okay, thank you very much.
Mm-hmm. Thank you, and there we will leave it. We used up our time. Hope we help with all those folks. Phil Nixon, our guest, he's a extension entomologist with U of I. And in the meantime, if you have these kinds of questions, go to your phone book and look for your closest extension person. And
it'll be under University of Illinois Extension or underneath your county and then University of Illinois Extension.
So those people can help. Also, if you have internet access, you can go to the Extension website, and there is information there. A lot of different kinds of information, but certainly there's information on dealing with common household and garden pests, so that might also be a place to get help. And then you talk to your extension person, and if they can't answer the question, then Phil is the guy that has to take care of it.
The buck always stops here if they can't handle it.
Well, thanks very much, Phil Nixon. Our program here, our Focus 580, is made possible by a grant from Strawberry Fields on West Springfield Avenue in downtown Urbana. Strawberry Fields provides a wide assortment of natural foods, vitamins, bulk herbs, fresh breads, and produce. The Strawberry Fields Cafe, looking out on Springfield Avenue, features expanded seating for the deli and coffee bar. The broadcast also made possible with support from the Little Theater on the Square in Sullivan, presenting Seussical from Wednesday, August 11th through Sunday, August